You are listening to episode 277 of the Game Deflators Podcast. My name's John, and here on the Game Deflators Podcast, we like to talk about games we've recently picked up, games we're currently playing, and this week, we're becoming professional pressure washers on this week's Inflation Deflation Challenge. So this week, I'm actually joined by Chris of Open Bar Miami podcast, a soon-to-come podcast. They're currently recording episodes. We'll have some stuff launched in the near future. Mm-hmm. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, John. This is something I've always wanted to do. You know, yeah. I like to drink a lot of alcohol and play video games.
Seems a pretty similar on this side. I don't know so much about the alcohol, but play a lot of games. So Ryan and I used to actually do, we would record our episodes at night. I forget like when we used to do this back in the day, but we'd straight up have like a beer or whatever type of cocktail we were hanging out with, just drinking and recording. I do remember there was one night we were recording and I got some like really good rum from overseas, and he didn't realize it was rum. And he was like, okay. Rum. He thought it was whiskey. So he takes a sip. He just immediately was like, I got to go throw up. And so he probably didn't want me to say that, but I don't know if he'll ever hear this episode. So yeah, he goes and starts puking. He's like, all right, I'm good. Let's go ahead and record again.
Rum will fuck you up. Is that sugar?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, for him, it was just the initial sip.
Oh, I forgot to ask. Is this a PG pod?
Somewhat. I mean, we do a little bit of cursing, but not a whole ton.
Okay. I'll try to keep it tame.
Yeah. PG 13. I mean, we're set, you know, we're set on like Apple and everything for, explicit content just in case, cause I do have the occasional F-bomb that I drop. And so is Ryan. And then obviously you got one there too. So we're all good. We're all good. But to kick things off, you can find the Game Deflators podcast on thegamedeflators.com, our currently up-to-date website. I don't remember if I updated it this week. You can find us on YouTube at Game Deflators. We are on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads as at The Game Deflators. You can find us on X as Game Deflators. You can also find us on a podcast app. You're listening to one right now. Leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate it. And some comments. Always good. Chris, anywhere they can find you right now other than, you know. So
right now we're on Instagram. Open Bar _ Miami, and we're also on X, and it's the same way, Open Bar _ Miami. And we haven't launched anything yet, but look for us in the next few weeks. We'll be uploading some clips and eventually we'll be going live.
And what can people expect to hear on that podcast?
We like to make it very Miami centric with a few cocktails or perhaps a good beer, and we'll drink throughout the pod, introduce the drink, we'll shoot the shit about whatever is currently happening in America with a Miami point of view, and of course we like to cover all of the crazy Miami and Florida stories that do happen as well.
I'm glad you clarified Florida, because people might be confused and think Miami, Ohio, Miami, Arizona.
By the way, Miami, Ohio is in Oxford, Ohio. Not a real place.
Really? So we actually do have a Miami, Arizona, though.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's not far from, it's probably about 40, 50 miles from where we're at recording. But it's actually kind of funny, because when you go into that area, they actually have a little tiny like chapel set up, and it has a San Lázaro on the inside. So I just laugh every time we get there.
Do they have a lot of Cubans too?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. It's a mining town. I don't know many Cubans that mine copper. So I just laugh, because every time we go there, it's like the little tiny temple type setup. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, this is straight Miami vibes.
You got to get a shrine to Vice City.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's jump into our gaming pickup. So, you know, I'll kick it off here. I didn't have many. What I ended up picking up was .hack GU, the recoded or remastered, whatever it is. So they took the .hack GU games from the PS2. All three of them, condensed them into a PS4 version for one disc that you can, you know, have access to. It was like $17 on Amazon for a used copy, like new condition. So I just kind of pulled the trigger. I figured that's one of those things that over time is just going to, you know, either go up in value or, you know, just from a standpoint of not having to flip out a bunch of discs every time on my PS2 and memory cards, it makes sense to pick up the PS4 copy.
For sure.
So I'm a big fan of RPGs, if you've heard prior episodes. And that's just my thing. So whenever I can get a good deal on one, it's definitely worthwhile. And that's what I went with. And then as far as what I'm currently playing, other than Power Wash Simulator, which I kind of don't even want to add to my currently playing list right now, I was playing some Tales of Symphonia this week. So that game, for an update for everybody out there in Game Deflator's Land, really all I've done so far is kind of gone back to the town of Luum. I forget the name of the town offhand. I'm notoriously bad with remembering things in games, like names of people and names of like locations. So forgive me on that. But it's a town that's been destroyed by the Zions. And then we have to go to the Asgard human ranch. And we're currently infiltrating that to take down the main boss. That's where I'm at right now in the game. I'm probably about 20 hours in, which I think is about halfway through the game. So my goal right now is to hopefully beat that in the next month or two and then start on my new game's resolution, which I don't know why I'm forgetting it all of a sudden, but I have a new game's resolution I'm supposed to be playing. It's that bad, dude. Like my mind goes everywhere when it comes to gaming. So, and you've probably heard, I got a crap ton of games in the collections, like 2000 games. So
yeah, you got a huge backlog.
My backlog is terrible. it's absolutely terrible. So people might be wondering, you know, why am I bringing Chris on from Open Bar Miami? It's not a gaming centric podcast, but Chris is actually a pretty big gamer. And we go back, number of years, quite a few years. So yeah, definitely excited to hear what you picked up, what you're currently playing. I do know a couple things that you're currently playing, and then we'll get into some of the topics that we're going to talk about today.
So recently I've picked up Helldivers 2, which is hot right now. The internet can't get enough of that game. Dynasty Warriors 9. I don't know if you've ever been a Dynasty Warriors kind of guy. They're all pretty much the same kind of game since the first one. It's get out there and beat up a bunch of dudes. This one's a little bit different in the sense that they took a lot of elements from other games like Assassin's Creed and kind of combined it with Dynasty Warriors. So now instead of you go from mission to mission, now it's you got one giant map and you just run around completing missions and you're leveling up your character. You're picking up equipment. A lot of crafting is involved. They made a game that was already very Japanese, even though it's about China, and made it more Japanese. And Helldivers, I literally cannot get enough of that game. It reminds me so much of Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. It's complete PvE. You've got these wild guns and you're finding these giant bugs and these robots. It's got a huge Starship Troopers kind of vibe. You know, the game reminds you that it's all about spreading democracy across the universe, even on barren planets where we don't belong.
So it's the United States.
Hey, respect liberty, all right?
Is that the message of a game? There's a bald eagle flying in the background.
Might as well.
I have a question for you on that, though. Like Helldivers 2 compared to Helldivers 1, like, have you played Helldivers 1 or no?
So I never... It's funny you ask that because I've always had that game in my library.
Same.
Because I know PlayStation gave it away a few, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, and never played it. But I watched some of the video. It's basically the same exact game, but in 3D.
Okay, so it's like top down in the other game, and this one's correct. More like first person style or third person?
Third person. So in the first game, it's all top down. It's a lot easier to shoot each other. If you ask me, it kind of plays like a... like Grand Theft, the old school Grand Theft Autos before they went 3D.
Oh, man.
Or Hotline Miami. So you're picking up crazy guns. You can call down vehicles, strikes that are dropping nukes. The game's ridiculous. And of course, you can hurt your teammates, which makes it even more ridiculous.
Are you playing on PC or PS5 for Helldivers 2?
On PS5. As much as I love playing games on my PC, I can only play... games that will not graphically challenge my PC.
Gotcha. Yeah, I upgraded my video card and everything. Well, I built a new PC about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And then got like a NVIDIA, not NVIDIA, I got an AMD 6700 XT or something like that. I don't remember which one I got, but I put it in there. That was my whole goal. Like, I wanted a gaming PC. I wanted something that could, you know, handle audio and video editing correctly, which has been great. And then obviously I can, you know, play games on close to max settings, if not max settings, for a lot of these titles that are out now. So that's kind of nice. So I'll probably give Helldivers 2 a chance at some point, but I do have number one upstairs. I got a physical copy, and it's always caught my attention as like a game I wanted to check out.
Right.
Knowing it's kind of like that old GTA style, like 1 and 2 vibe that you were saying, which is crazy. Cause like those were it was so hard to control those games. It was so difficult. Like the whole concept of mission based running around, like what we have in GTA today, but from a top down view is insane. I don't know how we played that type of stuff back then.
I don't either. And it, from what I was watching for the videos on the original game, it seems like 30% of your damage on average is damage you output to against your teammates.
Jeez. So. That's kind of ridiculous. So is that pretty much what you're currently playing right now? Is those two games for the most part?
That and Final Fantasy VII Remake, which isn't something I just picked up, but I'm kind of pushing to finish because the new one just dropped and I really want to get into that.
Did you ever play the first, like the original?
Of course. Are you kidding me? I played it on PlayStation. I had a copy on PC. I rebought it again on PC. I've been waiting over a decade to play that game. And then I got it, played about 30 hours, and then kind of forgot to finish.
Gotcha. Dude, I don't know how in high school we never talked video games together. I don't know how.
It's weird. Like high school, I was clearly a nerd, but I didn't
undercover.
I guess almost. I mean, not really undercover. I was in AP classes. I hung out with some nerds. I ran cross country. And you can't run cross country if you're not a nerd.
Yeah, I was going to say, man. I forgot you ran cross country.
But then I was also, you know, the cool guy. I sold stuff and
this man had hot Cheetos dealings all day long. Like, if you wanted snacks, this was the guy to go to.
Yeah, they didn't call me Candyman for no reason.
That was crazy, man. This guy would bust into classes when we were, like, not in his class, just in other classes, just to sell snacks to people.
Yeah, and the teachers just took it, because what choice did they have?
Oh, shit, they were probably buying, too. I taught for a few years after college, and, you know, there were times where you're sitting there taking care of kids, and you're like, shit, lunch is in 2 hours? Like, I really wish I had a snack right now. And then in comes Candyman. Like, that's what I needed at those schools I was teaching at, was a Candyman. And it never happened.
These kids nowadays, they're just entitled. They're not making their own money anymore.
I swear, man, I could have sworn that you would split stuff up almost like drugs in a way where it was like, I'm trying to think of like a situation. It might have been like, I don't know, beef jerky or something like that. You would kind of divvy it out. I don't recall. Maybe it might have been somebody else, but I think that was
Brittany McNair.
Okay, that's right. That's right. So
RIP.
Yeah, I remember there were people that would be like, okay, I got this bag of beef jerky. Let me split it into like nickel bags and then like give it to people.
I was more into like, you know, little Reese's cups. I used to sell those $3.50, seven for a dollar. I remember a time when I had John Tomlinson working for me, and he was not discreet about his work. And Mr. Garcia caught him, confiscated the bag. And when I heard about this, I ran over to Mr. Garcia's classroom right before lunch. Mm-hmm. And he told me he wouldn't give it back to me. And I can see some wrappers in his trash can.
That man, that man ate that candy.
100%. Monster.
That was a biology teacher, right?
Yes. Never had him, but he was a character.
You know what? I had him twice. And I could see him doing exactly that, man. So if he's listening to this podcast right now, you owe Chris, with the rate of inflation, probably about $2.
No, at this point, it's probably like 40. Bro, okay. I'd make like $20 on like a $7 bag.
That's insane, dude.
It was insane.
I don't know how I never got in the candy game. Well, either way, man, I'm surprised that we never like talked video games back then, but it makes sense. Like we kind of hung out, but we didn't hang out at the same time. Right. So it is what it is. But I mean, I don't know. We're here now talking games, so it makes up for it.
Yeah. I feel like you and I always connected on sports.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the weird thing is like majority of people I connected with was on sports and not gaming. Like right. I had maybe... I actually don't recall talking gaming with many people at all in school. So it's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. So what is man
days, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. All right, let's go into some topics here, man. So I got lined up for us to talk third-person shooters versus first-person shooters. Which one is better? VR gaming, and is it a fad? And then good combos for consoles or PC. So like, what's the best combination? Xbox, Nintendo, PS5, and or PC. So what's the best thing there? And then we'll dive into our inflation deflation of the week. So you're aware of what the inflation deflation is if you haven't heard it. If the game is worth it, we would say that the game is likely inflated based on a price point. So if we think a game would be worth $20 and it's currently selling for $10, we would say that the game is currently deflated. If the game is, say, $40 and we're like, no, it's worth $20, then the game would be inflated at that point. So Okay. Concept there. And if we think the price is just right, we'll say it's just right. So we'll go into that in a bit. All right. So third-person shooters versus first-person shooters. You had some notes. You had some games for comparison's sake. Yes. I've got from my own experiences games that I played in the past too, first-person, third-person, and what I've kind of enjoyed more. I'll kick it off to you first as a guest to kind of give your list, and we'll just kind of talk back and forth.
All right. So for when it comes to the debate of third-person versus first-person shooters, I honestly think third-person shooters are where it's been at for at least the last decade. My favorites would be Helldivers 2, Mass Effect 3, Grand Theft Auto 5, if we want to count that as a shooter, which I do, because, I mean, you're running around with guns all day, right?
Mm-hmm. And dildos.
And dildos. But, hey, you can do that in Cyberpunk as well, and that's a first-person shooter.
Okay, that's true.
Battlefront, the original versus the new Battlefront series. I feel like even those series of games had a better following than the current iteration of the Battlefront games. Not to say that they aren't good, but it doesn't have the same kind of charm or wackiness or what I like to call jank. Sometimes a good game needs some jank. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you on the third person sense. Like, for me, it's kind of the versatile aspect, though, of some of those games. So when I think Last of Us, when I think Uncharted,
right,
and you get in those situations where, like, the majority of a game is in that third person type setting, but then you can kind of go into, like, a shoulder view for the most part that almost makes it first person. Mm-hmm. That's really where I kind of, that's, you know, where I like to live with shooter games. I will play first person shooters. I don't mind them. I love me some Apex Legends whenever I dive into it. I used to play a lot of Call of Duty back in the day. Actually, Simmons and I used to play a lot of Call of Duty in high school. And right after, Batman would claymore the hell out of me. And every single game, this shit used to bug me so much. You just run and claymore blows you up with a car. That was his game. He pissed me off so often. But yeah, I would play some first-person shooters back in the day. Killzone be another one that I played a lot of.
Killzone was a classic.
Yeah, Killzone was a lot of fun. I actually just beat the third one not too long ago. Actually, probably long ago. It was before my kid was born, so it's been a while. I think not too long ago, because like it's just blowing by at this point. But I do want to play one on PS4. But yeah, man, I got the same mindset. Like I love that view. For me, it doesn't feel as like sickening as you're walking around having to go in that first person mode. So I've just kind of, to your point, man, I've grown accustomed over the last 10 years or so to third person based shooters.
And call me crazy, but in the last 10 years, third person shooters seem to have even better narratives than all the first person shooters.
Yeah, you're right. Like when you think about Call of Duty is a good example, right? Your campaign is like maybe 2-3 hours.
Right.
And then the rest of it is just based off of like, let's just shoot. Whereas a lot of it is third person shooters. You're right. You got your Uncharted's. You've got your Last of Us games.
Metal Gear Solid 5.
Metal Gear Solid.
My most favorite games of all time.
Yep. Great example of just like, you know, narrative based games that really kind of put the story at the forefront and then kind of have the shooting element is in there. And it's meant to be part of that story. It's not so much like this is all you're doing. Right.
Correct.
And it gives you that explorability too, having a third person based game where it's like, okay, I'm a little more like my surroundings are easier to kind of handle in a third person mode because I'm not so like focused on like one area where, you know, like what's directly in front of me. Whereas third person, it's like, okay, I'm looking at the overall landscape and I don't have to focus on, you know, straight in front of me, but I've got my peripheral and everything I can kind of handle too.
Yeah. And you mentioned Last of Us, which is a great narrative for a third-person shooter. And you feel stressed for Joel and Ellie when you're walking into situations. You're like, oh, shoot, there goes one of those fungus looking creatures, or there's a gang of dudes here that ready to jack us and murder us. And if you're doing it in first person, it's not as it's as tense, because obviously if you ever play a first person shooter horror, those are very tense situations. But if it's third person, I feel like it annies it up a little bit.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it's the whole surroundings aspect. It just kind of, I don't know, it flows better for me. You know, another series, if you haven't played this one yet, the reboot of Tomb Raider that they did back on PS3, and then they started them again on PS4. Like they upgraded them.
I played The Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Oh, phenomenal man. Game. Those games are so good. I still need to play Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
Same.
So yeah, that's so you may have heard on the last episode or two, but my wife and I have our game that we play together, and then I've got my game that we play, or that I play, and then she has her own game. So like, she's playing Hogwarts Legacy still right now. Nice. I'm playing Tales of Symphonia right now. And then we're going to start Moss 2, the VR game, which we'll get into VR here in a bit, obviously. But we've played the Tomb Raider games together, and she's normally not a big fan of like third person shooters, first person shooters. It's just something about the controls and, you know, having to aim and all that. She's not a big fan of doing that. Whereas like platformers and things of that nature, where not that it's like more forgiving, but it's not as intense, right? And like, she'll bring that up all the time. Like, I think she's better at first person shooters actually, because it's like that. I see what's in front of me and I can aim at what's in front of me. Whereas third person, to your point that you made earlier, you're in this situation and shit's happening all around you, and you're like, what do I do? Like, I got to quickly pivot from my third person view to my over shoulder view to try and shoot enemies and such. And then the aiming's just a little different. It's not as fluid as, you know, it's harder. Those games are harder. And so I've noticed over the last few years, as we play those games, Tomb Raider specifically, she'll get in a mode where she's like, oh shit, I got my bow on me, I got to switch to my gun. And she's like flipping out in the process of everything coming her way. Whereas first person, she's like, I'm just going to empty a full clip, change my next gun with one button, empty a full clip and change back. So it's been interesting kind of seeing her progress in different shooter type games over the years too.
Yeah. You guys just finished playing Tiny Tina's Wonderland, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you probably heard a review on that.
I was a little bit shocked.
I mean, I'm just not a fan, dude. Like, I love the story. So you heard our Dungeons & Dragons episode. You know that we enjoy playing Dungeons & Dragons. And Tiny Tina's Wonderland is very much D&D-esque with the story and everything. Like, they have D20s that you find and hit, and it gets you a bunch of treasure, right?
Yeah.
I was so disappointed by that. I would come up to a D20, I'd hit a 20, I'm like, oh shit, like this is gonna have like great loot. We're gonna have like ultimate weapons and all sorts of stuff. No, it was like the same rare bullshit that we had picked up the entire time. So like, there was never an instance where we rolled a 20 and we're like, oh man, like this is impressive. Cause every single enemy you killed, every box you opened just exploded of loot, and like 95% of it was garbage.
Yeah,
on the loot. And it just bugs me, like, why even do that? Like, I know to skip over to green and the white and yellow type stuff and only find the purple. I know that, like, that's, I've played games like that in the past. I've just never enjoyed being like overwhelmed with a bunch of trash.
Yeah, you're not into loot management. Most people
know. No, and why? Like, I don't think anybody is. I mean, I've played, you know, like Oblivion, and I've played Neverwinter Nights and a lot of those games where you come across loot and stuff, but the inventory management isn't bad, because you're like, okay, they have one weapon on them, and is that weapon better than what I have now? No? Okay, cool. Move on. Not, let me look at 40 different weapons that have hit the ground and try and find one that maybe works. And then, okay, maybe I'll take a couple to sell, but now my inventory is limited to 36 guns. So now I got to drop shit anyways down the road because I might find something that's better. It just bugs me. So not a fan of that style of game. And the story itself is fine. The story was fine. Like, I enjoyed it. It was laughable moments. We had a good time, but no. And that's a first person shooter technically.
Right, right. Yeah. I didn't really get into Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. I think I maybe got like 3 hours in, but Borderlands 1, 2, and 3, I played the heck out of those games. And 2 is probably where the narrative peaked, and 3 is where the gameplay peaked. And there's always been this feeling of being, what's the word I'm looking for? Encumbered with too many choices of weapons. But after a while, you'd get used to who makes what weapons, what styles you like, and what elements you're going for. So if you can stick to a build and you already know what's what, you can kind of just weed out most of the weapons a lot of the time. But you kind of have to know what build you want from the jump.
Yeah, and the thing with Tiny Tina's is very much like a, I don't know how it is in Borderlands 1, it's been a long time, but it's, you know, oh, you've got your dexterity, you've got your intelligence, you've got all these other things that you're building on, and you've got magic and things that you can use that are, you know, tied to D&D. But the issue is, like, even the elements. Mm-hmm. Some of the guns, like, made no sense of elements. Like, I realized, like, what was happening. Oh, this is lightning damage, this is fire damage, etc. And it helped in certain instances when you were battling certain enemies. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, like, I'm trying to think. Like, nothing was really, like, very obvious. Like, oh, yeah, this gun that does lightning damage is so much better than this other gun, right? Like,
yeah,
we were able to coast through, like, 90% of a game, we were able to coast through it without having to worry about any sort of elemental damage whatsoever.
And I don't know how the builds work in that game, but I could tell you in Borderlands, if the first three, if you picked a siren and you went with, like, an elemental build, it was devastating for your enemies. Devastating. Those were always my favorite builds, actually.
Yeah, this, I mean, we just kind of went with whatever had the most power and allowed, like, you had critical damage on that, which I don't know how it is in Borderlands 1 through 3, but, like, it really kind of tried to tie in D&D to a first-person shooter. So you had, like, as you're building, you had the ability to, like, improve your critical roll, basically, your nat 20. Yeah. You had the ability to kind of boost up your rate at which you would get critical damage, which was, like, I think we peaked it at, like, 25 or 27%. Chance that every bullet that hit was a critical, and then you had the ability to, like, improve your critical damage as well. So really what we ended up focusing on the entire game was, you know, let's boost our critical damage ability, so the rate at which we can do it, and then let's build up how much critical damage we do. And we just found that, like, we would blow through enemies even at lower levels, like 2-3 levels below what we were supposed to be, with no issue for the most part, because of the amount of critical damage we were doing.
Sounds like, so, you made a glass cannon mage.
Yeah, pretty much. That's probably the right terminology there for that. Which, you know, so that reminds me. I have a buddy that did a glass cannon mage for Elden Ring, and it was absolutely hilarious. Like, just the same deal, right? Like, just put all my stats into one thing and just have, like, the worst spell and just blow an enemy up. Like, it was great watching that go down. So, yeah, I mean, you get hit one time, you're screwed. At least in this, we did boost our HP and stuff occasionally.
Okay.
But, I mean, it is what it is. And then we were able to get a familiar as well. We had a mushroom familiar that we built at some point of our character. So, you know, even if we went down in that game, like, he would go down. It's like 10 seconds or whatever before you start getting revived. So we had a little mushroom to literally revive us.
Wow.
So we had, yeah. So it's like, oh, you died? Cool. Mushroom, revive me.
That's a luxury I never had in any of the other Borderlands games.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can play multiplayer in this one, too. So, like, we just chose to not have two of us playing at the same time. We would just trade off controls.
So, okay. Yeah. One element that you guys may have missed is if you do decide to play multiplayer with other people, that the game actually gets more difficult.
Really? I didn't know that.
So you'll get more badasses. I don't know what they call them in Tiny Tina's, but generally, like, the bigger guys. The biggest form of a common enemy is called a badass, and they usually drop the best gear.
Yeah, we would have encounters that would happen. So, like, on the main world map that mm-hmm. we were on, there would be an encounter and you would fight however many people through whatever amount of scenes.
Right.
And it'd end up with, like, okay loot.
Yeah. So if you play with more people, tougher enemies, better loot.
That makes sense. And I've heard of the Borderlands games that you could actually go into the game if you're playing multiplayer online. Your buddy could drop everything, disconnect. You get to keep all the shit that they drop. And then it's like a cheat, basically.
Yeah, I think that started in Borderlands 2, because I don't remember that being a thing in 1. And it carried over to 3. And the prequel sequel,
is that what it's called?
The pre-sequel. Yeah. That one was okay. I didn't really care for the slow space jumping element, but
yeah,
it was cool. It just furthered the story of Jack, if you're into that.
Makes sense. So I think overall verdict here is third person all the way.
100%. 100%. I don't even honestly play shooters like that anymore. They're too intense for me. I'm a very chill. The last real shooter I really got into was Overwatch. Mm-hmm. And I think most people would say that game's kind of childish.
Yeah, I would say about a lot of games actually. You know, I think I wouldn't say they're so intense for me as much as they are easy. I don't find them challenging anymore. So things like Apex, I'm not saying like I'm predator status on Apex, which is so weird to think that that's the term is predator on there, Apex Predator. so, you know, that first off is hilarious. But like, I'm not going to say like I'm the best out there at first person shooters, but they are so much easier to get headshots and just deal certain types of damage than a third person game. Like a third person to me, I feel like you really need to be like on your game to do what you need to do and be successful. First person, it's like you can go guns blazing in there as a noob and knock out like vets on that game and be all right. You know,
how do you deal with the people? That's the most intense part for me.
On like on games or it's like multiplayer based games like that.
I feel like multiplayer shooters and League of Legends have a very toxic community.
Yeah, toxicity is so bad. We've actually talked gaming toxicity and people are like, oh, you know, you guys are just pussies and stuff. But you know, it's one of those things, like if I'm hopping on a game to enjoy myself, I just don't want to deal with somebody saying that they're going to bang my mom. Right. And yeah, like,
or being called the N-word.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In your case, you got that. I've got, you know, mom.
I'm sure you get that too.
You know, I don't think I have, but in those instances, maybe I've felt, you know, I can see why it's hurt so much. No, I'm just kidding. No, I haven't been called that actually on gaming, but I have played with buddies that Simmons actually, when we played online, occasionally he would get called that. And I was like, that's so fucked up, man. Like, because you're hidden behind a keyboard, which you need as a hacker that can get your IP address, name your address, and be like, all right, we'll be there tomorrow type deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with those types of games, but I mean, I experienced it in like third person, like Gears of War when we would play as well. We would have
Gears of War.
That was hilarious. But like you could talk with the other team the entire time too. So like that was hilarious when you talk to the other team. And I know some games have like, perimeter voice or whatever. So you can hear certain players from other teams based on a certain perimeter or proximity chat, I think is what it's called. I haven't played too much with that. The only time I've had is like playing Apex where teammates are yelling at you because like, oh, you were supposed to come revive me, blah, blah. And you're like, dude, you were surrounded by three or four people. Like, why am I going to come get you and die in a match? Right. Like that makes no sense. So typically in Apex, you find yourself like, you know, because your shield went down or whatever it may be. Oh, let me run. I've got to, you know, kind of do my thing because there's two things that'll happen here. I'm either going to A, run in there and go 1v3 and somebody's going to yell at me because I went 1v3 and died. Or B, you're going to bolt. They're going to get pissed at you because you didn't go in 1v3 to try and revive them. And then they get angry about it. No, you can't win in those types of games. And then they yell at you and get pissed off and like, oh, you suck, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, it's whatever. So half the time I play Apex, I actually just mute everybody and just go based off of, you know, overall cues, essentially. That's usually what I do in those games because I'm just so sick of dealing with bullshit on games like that. Like, I just want to enjoy my time. I'm going on to relax and play, and I just don't need to deal with somebody getting too competitive and pissed off because you didn't revive them or you didn't like have their back in one instance when you yourself are being overtaken by enemies. So
be better, John.
I will. I gotta be a better teammate, I guess. Yeah, dude, that's always my favorite. Like you're playing it, you would play in a 3v3 match of some sort. I think they got rid of F4 on Apex, if I recall, but you'd be playing on the 3v3 and somebody would just bolt like and just go do their thing, and then they get knocked out, and then they start saying like revive me. It's like, no, you fucking went all the way there on your own accord. Like, I'm not gonna go to that part of the map because you were an idiot. Like, you're just gonna watch now. And they get angry at you, man. So yeah, I haven't played in a while, but that's how I deal with it, long story short.
I always thought Apex was a very team-centric kind of game.
Yeah, you would think.
You would think so. I tried few rounds of it. It was okay.
You have to have people that legit you're talking to on the mic and that you're friendly with. And you can, like, if you and me and somebody else that we know is playing Apex, you know, we can give each other shit like, oh, hey, you shouldn't have gone 1v1, right? Like, I'm not going to stand there and like call you the N-word and yell at you and be like, hey, you shouldn't have gone 1v3 and you suck. And like, you should stop playing this game and you should go kill yourself. Like, that doesn't happen when you play with friends, right? Like, you give each other shit, but it's like at the same time, you're still enjoying the game and having a good time. So
yeah, just being silly.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's all about, right? So
that's why I love Helldivers.
Yep, you can be crazy on that and it's kind have of a good time.
It's part of the game. It expects you to behave that way.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give that a shot for sure. And then I'll have to give you a buzz. I think there's cross-platform capabilities there.
I got two buddies that I'm playing with. They play on PC and I play on
PC. I mean, I got a PS5, so I can do either one, I guess. I usually, when I play PC anyways, I put my PS5 controller into the PC to play. So
nice.
Yeah, so it works out that way. Let's jump into VR gaming and is it a fad? So last week I had Will from the PlayStation 8 Dead podcast on. We were talking that Sony pretty much looks like they're not supporting VR, right? And on the outside looking in, it looks like, hey, VR is a dying thing. But then when you look at Meta and what's happening with like the Meta Quest and their headsets, they actually, so in Q3 of last year, they had like their lowest point of sales. They lost like $3.7 billion. But apparently they sold 20 million units as well. So when you kind of think of PSVR 2 selling like, I'm going to say like 2 million headsets. I forget what the overall number is. I think it's less than 2 million.
I think you said it was around 1 million last episode.
Well, that was initial. That was initial. Okay. So I don't know what it is now, most updated numbers. But Meta has like 75% of the overall market share when it comes to VR headsets. I don't play VR enough to be like, hey, is it a fad? Is it not? But I think the numbers are pretty obvious, right? Like 20 million headsets over the course of however long, they're losing money left and right with some of these, you know, things. They're investing because they believe it's a future, but it reminds me very much of like 3D TVs, you know? And like 3D TVs was a future, and like PlayStation released a 3D TV, and PlayStation had 3D based games where you put on your glasses and whatnot. Like I remember those days. And it just kind of came and went. I think VR, there's enough players in the market that are kind of vying for that position that it could be lively. Do I think the tech is there right now? Somewhat. I think it's somewhat there. I don't think it's all the way there. I think we're still getting over the fact of like people have this like perception of Ready Player One for VR, where you put on the headset, you can run around in place and do your thing, right? When in reality, all VR is you're standing there with controllers looking through a headset.
Right.
You know? And so I think that we kind of have to get to a point where VR catches up with like what the market wants it to be. Because right now it's still kind of that in between. And I'm not sure if that's going to be like detrimental to it in the long run. Like we have VR places that you can go to and you can experience like run in place and do that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But in the home setting, it doesn't exist. It does, but it's like super expensive. So, you know, I'm just not sure like long-term where VR stands. Like, is it a situation where we are going to run into like VR as it stands today will be dead and it'll evolve? Or does VR just die in general as a concept for gaming because it's just not getting enough buy-in?
Honestly, I haven't really been looking at this, but I think it depends on the software development. Are there applications that people actually want on these devices? And I've seen some really, really, really cool applications. My favorite being Flight Simulator on the Oculus. Number one, it almost made me throw up the first time I put it. but once my brain adjusted, it was mind-blowing. I think even if we're not going to be using it for gaming, I think it's inevitable that we're at least going to use it for simulations. And this is how we're going to be able to prepare people for real life situations, whether that's flying, training for space, going to war, all of these things can be applied. And if we can make it work better with AR, kind of the way where Apple is leaning towards with their glasses, I think the sky's the limit with that. But obviously the price point needs to come down to a point where more households than not can purchase it.
Yeah, like the alternate reality of Apple's like $3,500, I think, for a price point. And in Meta, I want to say they just dropped the headset price like $200.
Wow.
Or they've dropped it $200. I don't know if it's maybe at $200. But it's pretty affordable, at least on the VR headset front, whereas the alternate reality, not so much. That's assuming Microsoft doesn't have anything that comes out anytime soon, unless they already have. I haven't been keeping up with the AR world too much. But I do know that Microsoft had something in development So, I mean, I just don't know if it's out yet. Cause I know some of my old coworkers went to like a Microsoft, innovation center. I forget what they're called, but they actually played with some of those AR headsets like 4 or 5 years ago. So if Microsoft doesn't have anything out, I'm shocked.
I'm shocked they already don't have something out.
I mean, or maybe they're looking at it from a technical standpoint of like, how cheap can we make this to combat $3,500 price point and make it more consumer friendly? I mean, like if Microsoft comes out, kind of like what they did with the Surface, right? If Microsoft comes out and they're like, oh yeah, here's a, you know, alternate reality headset at $750, Apple's sitting at $3,500, which one are you going to go with, right? Like, yeah, you got the Apple brand, but like we all know that the Microsoft one's going to be 10 times better.
I mean, yes, we know that.
We know this, but your Apple consumer does not.
Nor would they accept it if they knew otherwise.
No. Now, what you do is you take the Microsoft one, you put an Apple sticker on it, and then maybe, you know, that might be the solution right there. That sounds like some Miami stuff right there, by the way. Like a guy on the side of the street opening up a coat or a briefcase and like has VR or AR headsets of Microsoft with Apple logos on the side. I could see that happening out there.
100%. I once saw a lady lose her phone at Blackbird Ordinary down in Brickell, and her friend are tripping out, and this homeless dude comes up to her and he's like, hey, I can help you out. And she's like, how? And he was like, I've got this iPad. And I was like, I'm looking at her and I'm looking at him, and like, she's buying into this. So now I'm flabbergasted. So I'm like, I have to say something. So I go up to her and I'm like, it's like, hey lady, like, I get, you know, you're frazzled because you don't have your phone right now, but don't get hustled for an iPad. That's not what you want. No one wants to run around making calls on an iPad all day, and you don't know where he got that from.
It's probably what do you call it, like bricked, you know?
Probably. I noticed she was still going on with him, and I just walked away shaking my head.
Maybe it's kind of like that where they do like the three card ante type deal, you know, and they've always got the insider.
Oh, maybe he did have a guy steal her phone so he could sell her the iPad.
Or it was a situation where she was in on it, and like the hope was like that maybe you would come in because the deal is so good that you would purchase it instead. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. Like, there's a lot of hustling that goes out there.
Yeah, for sure. So,
all right, it makes
for
sense.
Sure.
So I guess going back on the VR topic real quick, you know, I think long term, I personally like where VR is with gaming. Like, I have a ton of PSVR games. I've enjoyed what I've played. There are some games that make me sick. Like playing Doom is just nauseating at that point for me. But playing games like Moss, any sort of platformer type games, things where I can kind of just walk around and experience my surroundings, ton of fun. I enjoy it so much. So I think your general consumer, it just has this weird perception of what VR is. They're not buying into it. And that's just kind of reality of it. Whereas like somebody like me, I see where VR is. I can appreciate where it's at right now. But I also agree, like, I would love to have I can run around and experience the world on like a, you know, revolving treadmill or something, to have some fun with it. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I see it all right now.
I mean, the only other way we get that is if we do like a neural link to our brains. So that we wouldn't even need a treadmill, and our brains would be able to cause ourselves to run within the VR world.
I just got to call Elon.
I know he did
that, right? They've already done that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that's like one of his goals, to put chips in all of our heads.
Yeah, he already did it to one person.
Wow.
Did you see that?
I did not see that.
So it's, I think it was a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. So literally could not move any limbs, essentially. And they installed the chip into a person's brain, and they were actually able to send signals to a computer to move the cursor for the mouse and click on different things that they want to click.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I would never do that.
That's no way. I just wish it wasn't him doing it.
I wouldn't even do it. Like, I don't care who it is doing it. I'm just not putting a chip in my brain to do that. Like,
I mean, if all my limbs aren't working, what do I have left to lose?
Look, okay, in that case, maybe, right? But like, just to do it willingly when you can do everything already, like, I've seen Suicide Squad. I don't need a chip in my brain. Like, I know what happens in the long run there. So I'm good. If I want to control a mouse, I will control a mouse with my hand right now.
The new Suicide Squad, an example of a third person shooter that's not so great.
You know, I think, okay, that's true. So I was actually pretty cool with like the concept of what they were doing, right? Like, they were putting story and everything else you know, at the
story
forefront.
Looks great.
Yeah, they were putting all that stuff at the forefront. Well, people were losing their shit. Like, you know, I think it was who's it, King Shark, I think is the character name. Mm-hmm. And he became like a Green Lantern or something like that. And people lost their minds, like, oh, there's no way he could do it. I'm like, it's an alternate reality in a comic book. Like, how can you get pissed with that? Like, there's so many different worlds in comic books that it doesn't, like, there's flipping Injustice where Superman is killing off the world and like being president of the world at this point. Like, that's not odd, but King Shark becoming like, so I just don't understand where people just lose their minds over this. But, you know, I think they went in with very good intentions with this game. And at the end of the day, it didn't meet the expectation of a lot of people. And now you have your, you know, your refunds coming through the door.
Yeah, it kind of, I looked at that project and it looked kind of rushed, in my opinion.
I mean, that's the gaming industry, it feels like, in 2023, 2024. So
chasing those dollars at endgame capitalism.
Yeah, and then cutting studio employees left and right after you've made bank. So, I mean, looking at Insomniac and what we talked about last week. But let's talk about combinations of games here or gaming consoles. So, you know, right now we've got the Xbox Series X and S. You've got Nintendo with the Switch, Nintendo Switch 2 probably coming out pretty soon, PS5 and PC. I mean, you've got other things like Steam Decks and Logitech stuff and Meta and all of that, but we're not going to dive too much into that. When we think combinations, I always like to think that for me, the best combination, if you're a gamer, is going to be Nintendo, PS5 and PC. That's the ultimate combination if you can afford it. If you can't, then you're probably along the lines of like nowadays PC and Nintendo. Primary reason being is that PlayStation is putting more games on PC than they have in the past. And then you do have access to things like VR and all of that as well. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's exclusives. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. When you look at Xbox, all of their exclusives are on PC. So like I don't need to necessarily, you know, or they're on Game Pass through PC. So I don't necessarily need to buy an Xbox to be able to enjoy those games. So if I want to, for example, play the new Senua game that comes out, mm-hmm. or Hellblade game, not Senua, because Senua's Sacrifice. So if I want to play a new Hellblade, I'll play it on PC. I'll get Game Pass for like a month. I'll play it on PC, finish up the game, remove my subscription, call it a day. Right. Like that's kind of the approach I plan on taking with Xbox games versus keeping the subscription going for a period of time. Like I'll just play the game and go on my way. And then with Nintendo, obviously, you're not going to get Mario games anywhere else. I don't see it happening anytime soon. You're not going to get your Zelda or your Kirby or anything that like that anywhere.
Not legally.
Yeah, not legally. That's true. I don't know. They're trying to shut it down everywhere, it seems. Good luck. when they got rid of Yuzu, another application went up like the next day under a different name. Like it's not going anywhere. It's all open source code anyways.
Can't stop the internet.
No, you can't stop the internet, and the internet always wins at the end of the day.
That's right.
So an PS5, obviously God of War. You've got the newest game that's coming out. I forget the name, but it's a samurai based game that they're announcing as an exclusive on PS5. You've got games like Sekiro and Ghost of Tsushima and all these other great games that are out there that are exclusive to the PlayStation 5 as well. Some of them I don't see coming to PC anytime soon. So it's more so like that timed exclusive aspect of, hey, if you really want to play the hottest PS5 game, you kind of have to play it now. If you want to play Nintendo games, you got to play Nintendo. If you want to play Xbox, you got a PC. And then that PC can do a lot of things and you don't need an Xbox.
Like, right.
It's really what it comes down to for me. So I don't know, what's your thought overall? Like, what's your best like combo if you can afford it?
I love your combo. I do find though that at least in the last like 3-4 years that no, actually maybe longer than like 5 years, where PS4 and PS5 have a lot of the games that I would play on PC on their platform now, even the indie games, and that just wasn't a thing just before 5 years ago. So honestly, if you can get away with a Switch and a PlayStation 5, I think you're pretty much set, because the Switch is going to have, you know, your cutesy games, going to have all your Mario games, your Zelda games, and all the great Nintendo exclusives. And on PS5, if there's a game you want to play on PC, it's probably not going to be as cool to play it on the console. Like, let's say City Skylines, for example. Great game, works better with a mouse than it does with a PS5 remote.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's 100% truth. The new, or not new, but the remastered, like Neverwinter Nights and Baldur's Gate games that they re-released, right, that were originally PC and then they brought them to console. So bad to play. It's so difficult. And so if you play it on PC, it's just going to be a much more enjoyable experience. So I totally feel you on that. Anything that's that type of game, you kind of have to play. Like Halo Wars.
Yeah, Halo was, I mean, yeah, it was great on Xbox because, you know, I guess they designed it for Xbox, but
still hard.
It would have been right. 10 times better on PC.
Oh, yeah, easily. Absolutely. Yeah, Red Alert games.
Easy.
I used to play Command & Conquer on PS1. It was the most, yes. It was so hard, so hard to play.
That was my first RTS game.
Oh, dude, it was so much fun, too, back then. Yeah, that and StarCraft. StarCraft was always fun, too.
I had StarCraft 64, and then I was like, this is fun, but I feel like it could be better. So I bought it on PC again.
And it was better.
It was 10 times better. Oh, my God.
100%. I used to have that combination was mine, too, by the way, Nintendo and PlayStation, like for years and years. I would have Xboxes I'd pick up, but I always tried to keep, you know, at least one Nintendo console and one PlayStation console as I got older. So before college, it was tough to be like, oh, convince your parents to buy this and buy this. Because just not out of the money. You did, because you're selling candy and chips. But I didn't. And so it was always PlayStation for me. And then I would have to convince my brother to get the other console. So when he was like, oh, I want to buy a PlayStation 2 as well, I'm like, no, you should get a GameCube. And so, like, he got his PS2 eventually, but like he had a GameCube and I had a PS2. And if he wanted to play mine, he would play his games on my PS2 and I would play on his GameCube.
No, that's brother, don't buy the greatest console of all time. Buy this Nintendo GameCube instead so we can share.
Hey, you know what? As a big brother, that makes 100% sense and definitely tracks. But I mean, how else were we going to play Smash Bros?
That's a good question. You make valid points.
I made a very compelling argument there, and we still play those GameCube games today. So, like, I don't want to hear it. Greatest console ever? We'll talk about greatest, you know, fighting game ever in Melee. So, just saying.
I hear you.
And there's going to be so many people to shit on me about that now, like calling Melee the greatest fighting game ever. You guys can all kick rocks.
I can't think of one better.
No, I mean, even the Switch one. I mean, I guess you can argue like the new Switch Super Smash is better because the amount of characters that you can play on.
Too many characters.
That's true. There's way too many characters. So many of them do the same thing. Like the Fire Emblem characters. Once you played one Fire Emblem character, you played them all.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need 20 characters from Fire Emblem that I've never heard of. You know, give me Marth, give me Roy, and I'm good. I don't need anybody else. Like, maybe Ike, because Ike was kind of cool. But other than that, I don't need any of it. So, yeah. I think it's the best ever, but your Tekken fans out there are going to really just, they're going to unsubscribe right now.
Yeah.
That's just how it's going to go.
They'll be okay. They're a minority.
All right. Let's dive into game review here. So for inflation deflation of the week, I played, you watched trailers and laughed your ass off. Power Wash Simulator. I don't even know why I played this. Ryan talked this thing up so much. My wife was just telling me like last night. She's like, oh, what game are you going to play? It's like, oh, I don't know. I'll play Power Wash Simulator because it was free and why not? And last month, I don't think it's free this month. I think it was last month. And so she's like, oh, yeah, Ryan played that. Like, he really liked it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give it a shot. See how it is. Yeah, I don't know. Ryan's crazy. So, you know, to kick things off here. Power Wash Simulator is it's exactly what I just said. It is a simulator where you power wash things. I don't like power washing things in real life, so I don't know why I thought I would enjoy power washing them in virtual life. It was developed by Future Lab. It was published by the Square Enix Collective, directed by James Marsden. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of producers here. I'm not going to go into too much of it. Overall ratings for this. Did I even pull ratings? I'm still confused by this. Like a 7 out of 10 average. And I think one company even gave it, it looks like Metacritic. It's currently sitting at an 84 out of 100. I don't get it. I really don't. So the entire concept is again, exactly what it sounds like. You are a character in a first person mode, by the way. So would this be considered a first person shooter? Maybe.
You are shooting water. So
you are shooting water. So yeah, it's an FPS. And so you start off with a career and you are in your outfit and you're to make $150 power washing the Power Wash Simulator van. And you have your like 5 or 6 nozzles you go through for power washing. You have no soap, which is kind of, you know, kind of concerning if you're starting a business and you don't have soap for your power washing on a vehicle. I don't know why. And then you have like, you go through your different nozzles. So you want to wet your car first and go down to the next nozzle, which is all backwards. They have the highest pressure nozzle first, and then they progress to the weakest pressure, which to me doesn't make sense. Like, why wouldn't you start with the lower pressure if you're going to have to wash the car down first, then go to your next pressure until you like get to a point where it's like the nitty gritty details. But what I don't understand is like, I'm going in on this vehicle with like as hard of pressure as I can, thinking it's not going to strip paint, which in real life it totally would. You would not pressure wash your vehicle like this. And so it's not even a real simulator at that point. Like, I know enough about pressure washing to know what you should not do with pressure washing. And it just goes against everything I've ever been told. Like, I have a pressure washer. I know how it works. So in a simulator, it's just so disappointing to see that they are like really screwing with you on this. But it, I mean, really, all you're doing is pressure washing. You just go around and the second level is like you pressure wash a yard and a doghouse. And I don't know why, but there's a lawnmower and a dog bowl that you also have to pressure wash.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Like you have to pressure wash a dog bowl. And the physics are not even there. Like everything's just sitting there. So like you pressure wash a dog bowl and you'd expect the thing to go flying. No, it just sits there in the ground. Like it's not even good physics.
Yeah, but that seems charming. I don't know what that is.
No, dude. Like I just, as I sat there, I'm like, why am I like, this isn't enjoyable. Like I don't even, I could barely get past washing the first vehicle, which took forever, by the way, like was not very like satisfying when it was all done, to then going into this yard, looking at me like, well, I'm overwhelmed. Like I'm on the job now. And is this really worth $450 in game money to pressure wash this lady's lawnmower and her chairs? And the house is perfectly fine in the area. It's just, it happens to be like her shed and her lawnmower and all these other things that need to be pressure washed. And I got through about half of that and was like, I'm going to bed. We'll talk with Chris in the morning and we'll review this. So you haven't played it yet. So what is your impression of the trailer of this game?
The trailer was number one, epic. I saw a few different trailers. I saw the trailer for the original game, and I saw the trailer for the Warhammer 40,000 expansion that came out.
I'm watching on the corner right now. Yeah.
You've got to hear it with the music.
Let me see. I don't know if this is going to bleed through. Let's see.
How epic does that sound?
Okay, I'll admit it does sound kind of epic.
And
just hilarious.
I've got a theory as to why this game might be popping with a certain part of the population. Let me ask you a question. Is your friend Ryan on the neurodivergent scale?
You're going to have to explain that further for me.
Like, does he have OCD? Maybe a little autistic?
If I said Ryan was autistic on the podcast, he'd kill me. No, I don't think Ryan's autistic.
Socially awkward?
No, actually not. I think Ryan just, he has a little OCD, I think. Well, OCD is probably not the right word. Like, OCD is actually a very serious thing. But in terms of wanting to be clean, I'm just watching this video still. It's so bad. So this is struggle, multiple monitors. It's just like watching a mech being cleaned right now. It's ridiculous. No, I mean, Ryan can be kind of clean. Like, he's a pretty clean guy. So I can see, like, he actually has like a bag he holds with him that has everything he needs in his day to day. He's got floss, he's got toothpicks, he's got, I think, a mini toothbrush in there, different lotions, like tons of stuff. Like, the guy's prepared for like the apocalypse, like, for sure.
I love that he does that. And even I walk around with a little bag, but I would say that's not normal behavior, or relatively normal by most people.
Yeah, by most people. Yeah. I enjoy it because I'm like, hey, dude, you got a toothpick? And he's like, yeah, I gotcha. So, like, I appreciate it.
I feel like, it.
100%.
So I think for people like them, that this game is very cathartic.
And that's how he kind of explained in the past. Like, this is a game where he could kind of sit back, relax, and just clean things. I'm just like, for me, the controls were so difficult. Like, I just did not have the patience for like my nozzle going everywhere.
Oh, shoot. It doesn't even stay straight, and there's no way to like hold the sway.
Well, you can, but it's like your right thumb. Like, you know, like if I was playing this game, okay, so here's where it might be better. VR power wash simulator with a power wash handheld accessory that you could use the motion controllers to power wash certain things. That to me might actually be better. but I just could not sit there with DualShock going around and jumping and getting in the different positions and squatting with the DualShock. And like, you could keep the water on, like you don't have to hold down the trigger the whole time. And there's like certain things where you could like, you could press up, for example, and then you're in like trigger mode or something like that, where you can literally just kind of use the right control and there's no issue, or the right joystick. That made it a little bit easier, but like long term, oh my God, I'm watching a SpongeBob one now and you're literally a SpongeBob's pineapple cleaning it. This is ridiculous. We'll go in prices and all this on the expansions here in a moment that are on Steam. But yeah, just looking, I'm like, oh, it's Bikini Bottom and there's the chum bucket, which this is ridiculous. They're in the ocean. How are you power washing? And I, either way, I could see where it's cathartic for some people. And for me, it was just not fun.
Yeah, it doesn't look fun at all.
No. It just was not. So let's get into brass tacks here. The game on Steam right now is $24.99. I mean, I'm just going to straight up say this isn't played from the get-go. Warhammer Special Pack. I mean, it does sound epic, but that's $7.99. Santa's Workshop. Wouldn't the water turn into... Okay, that one's free. Back to the Future, $7.99, which hypothetically, the vehicle could just go back in time and not be dirty, I think. So I don't think that's needed. I don't know why you're hiring. SpongeBob SquarePants, $7.99, which again does not make any sense. And then there's the Midgar Special Pack.
Whoa, which, I didn't see that one.
That one's free. And it looks like, I don't know. It, again, I'm just like, I don't understand it. Like, I get it, but at the same time, I don't. $24.99 is a lot to ask for. It was a lot to ask for me to take up the space on my PS5.
That's right, because we got free versions of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I waited. I held out. I really wanted to experience this game, and I should have just kept holding out.
So, question, is the game more expensive than Goat Simulator?
See, Goat Simulator, I haven't played that one, to be honest, but I've seen enough trailers and it's crazy enough that it reminds me of, God, I forget the name of the game. There was a game that I used to play on PS3 when I first had access to internet games on there, and you would launch different characters like off a giant like catapult into the city and hit different things and things would happen. So like you would launch this person into a wall and they would bounce and then they'd end up in the street and then a bunch of vehicles would start crashing and things pile up and you get a bunch of points, right?
Okay.
Goat Simulator reminds me very much of that. It's just absolute chaos of your overall surroundings. The physics are fun. There's things blowing up. There's trash cans flying, people getting hit by a goat. All of these fun things occurring. That is worth it. Like if I had to choose, if you said $24.99 for Goat Simulator, $24.99 for Power Wash Simulator, you have to choose one. You have no choice. I would choose Goat Simulator all day long, 10 out of 10 times.
Well, I reference Goat Simulator because I feel like that's where the line should be. If you're, if your game's not as good as this game, you have to be under that price point.
Like even the Farming Simulator is probably better than this, to be honest, because at least in that, you're doing something constructive, I guess you could say. Like, I don't know. I would just have more fun, like, building up my crops and changing out my engine parts to my tractor and like building all of that, right? Whereas this is like, it's work. It feels like more work.
So I'm looking here. Goat Simulator is $24.99 as well. You can't be the same price as the goat.
No, it's Goat Simulator all day long. What's Farming Simulator at?
Let's see.
Have you seen that one before?
I think I might also have that in my backlog. And I'm probably
going to play that. Yeah.
Also $24.99.
Okay, so I mean, I don't know, let's click Farming Simulator. I'm kind of curious now with the trailers. Yeah, I mean, this looks so much better. I mean, graphically, it's much better. You probably power wash your farm tools too. So, like, you know, long term, you're probably getting two games in one, realistically, with this one. Yeah, I mean, Farming Simulator. So I think the tier is Goat Simulator, then Farming Simulator, and then
Power Wash Simulator, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. There's probably other simulators that are better. And then all of them are kind of blown out of the water by Flight Simulator.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't know. Goat Simulator?
Yeah, it's true. Like, if you really like planes, yeah. Goat Simulator is, yeah. All the trailers I've seen are, it's worth it.
The videos I've seen of people just messing around in that game, epic.
Mm-hmm. Epic. Yeah, I mean, I like chaos type games like that. So if it's got a little chaos, it's fun, right? Mm-hmm. Power Wash, not so much. So, no. So end of the day, we are looking at inflated, heavily inflated.
Heavy.
On Power Wash Simulator. Yeah.
Terrible. Well,
good stuff. Well, dude, that is the end of our episode for this week. So I definitely appreciate you hopping on. If you want to remind folks where they can find Open Bar Miami and when they can expect those episodes.
At Open Bar _ Miami. You can also find me on X and Instagram as well. My handle is at 305 Candyman. And I will be posting links to the pods on those as well. But you can follow me in those locations. Just kind of get a vibe for what my character is like and how I behave and portray myself.
I was going to say, like, I saw the paddle one recently that you lost your paddle. And
I hope someone's enjoying it. It was a fun.
I laughed so hard when I read that. I'm like, that's 100% Chris. So, all right, we'll save that for a future Thirsty Thursday. Yes. But this has been episode 277 of the Game and Flitters podcast. I have been joined by Chris of Open Bar Miami. My name's John, and thanks for listening.
Peace.